was to see you in the places we would go, like your face is painted on the walls. I've been trying to forget all the moments that we spent, 'cause now I do it on my own. Oh, you and I were like this summer, but now it's winter.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. We want to welcome you to WWDB 860 AM Talk Radio. I want to thank you for joining us here at A Heart for the People Christian Ministry. Today we have two special guests with us, and we want to thank you for joining us, and we want to welcome them with open arms. We have Jennifer Molesky and we have Dean Maud. This is a very unique situation, but they share a son named Chucky. Chucky was murdered, if I'm not mistaken, correct me, a little over a year ago?
Yeah.
Okay, a little over a year ago, Chucky was murdered, and we want to hear their side of the story. We want to hear what they have to say. One of the things that I emphasize on my show is the fact that I want people to understand that there are people hurting out here. There's a lot of people who are dealing with no justice whatsoever. Some people are dealing with no phone calls from detectives or police or no kind of progress. So we want to hear from Jennifer and Dean and just get a background on Chucky and just what happened, the location. And we're going to start with we'll start with Jennifer. Jennifer, you want to start off, but just give us a background of your loss.
So on March 12th, got a phone call that Chucky was shot. He had just dropped his daughter, Isabella, off to my house, maybe like 2 hours before. And I ran down to Emerald Street because that's where he got shot at. He was already at Temple. We went up there. He was shot once in the back of the head. The way the bullet went in, they couldn't operate, so it was just, that was it. He was pronounced dead March 14th. And then, that was that. So he went back down to Emerald Street after dropping his daughter off at my house. And he was out there for a while. At first there was people out there. Then it pretty much was only him. He was sitting in his car. He had the car on. He had his phone in his hand. One of the neighbors could see into the car. And they said he had his phone in his hand and he must have fell asleep in the car. Two men drove down Madison Street, parked on the next 100 block of Madison, got out of the car, walked up the block, turned on Emerald, walked past Chucky in his car. The next block would be Willard Street. They turned the block on Willard, stood there for maybe about a minute, and then walked back down to Chucky's car. And then one kind of stood in front of him, one kind of went behind him, but Chucky was sleeping. And the man in front of him tried to shoot, his gun wouldn't go off. The one in back of him shot one shot, walked away. The other one stood there and kept trying to shoot, but his gun wouldn't go off until eventually neighbors started opening the doors, and then that's when they ran. So that's what happened that night.
Yeah, I was able to I think somebody had posted a video, and I was able to see pretty much exactly what you just described. I guess one of the questions that I would have first to start off with is, did he know them? Did, you know, was there any reason why they walked past his car and then came back? Was he targeted? Do you know any information as far as that's concerned?
So we don't know we have no definite of who it is.
Okay.
I mean, there's assumptions. There's two names from the very beginning. well, since the police posted that video, mm-hmm. that have been thrown out there, but I mean, their faces are covered.
Right.
So it can't really say either way.
Okay.
But as far as we know, and I mean, I have text messages from people from all over Jersey, Philly, Northeast, West Philly, Southwest Philly, young men Chucky was locked up with who, like, they just knew him. Mm-hmm. They weren't, I wouldn't necessarily say friends, but when they saw it, like, after Chucky died and they saw it, like, all over social media and, like, you know, No Gun Zone, everybody follows those pages. I was getting inboxes from people from all over saying, listen, I met Chuck in jail, because Chucky was in jail. He was on probation for Jesus forever for a possession charge. Never anything violent. He did not like guns. He hated guns, actually. He hated people who played with guns.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, these guys are messaging me, like, you know, wow, like, why Chuck? And I'm like, I don't know. So I would start to question them, like, you know, because when you're not hearing anything on the streets that there was any problems, you're like, all right, so maybe there was a problem someplace else. Did he have any problems? Did he ever get into an argument? Everybody's response is exactly the same. It's like a carbon copy response of Chucky. No, Chucky said what he said, and he just was a straight up guy. Like, no, nobody had a problem with Chuck.
Did
So no, I don't know. I don't know. There was no known enemies.
Okay.
So that's all I could say.
Okay. Dean, how do you feel in all of this?
Well, I agree with everything Jen said. There's not anybody that we can remotely think of that had a bad word to say about Chucky. We don't know why, and I think that weighs a lot on us. Because Chucky was a stand-up guy. Like, if he had a problem, he would tell you he had a problem. If he loved you, he loved you hard. We have no answers. And going as far as, you know, your introduction about the detectives not answering, and, you know, we haven't heard from the detectives probably in a year if it wasn't for us constantly emailing him. Like, it became to the point that, you know, Jennifer is his biological mom. His stepmom, I am married to his father. I've been in Chucky's life for 20 years. So it was always like Jen would call the detective and talk to him. Big Chucky would call the detective talking to him. I would call the detective, and it was like he would give us all different answers. So we finally came to, you know, we're just going to do everything by email. This way we have it in an email, and we'll include all of us on the email, so it's just one time he has to answer us. We're all getting the same answer. And we, if it isn't for us reaching out to him saying, hey, what's going on? Have you heard anything? Like, what about this lead that we gave you? Did you follow up on it? Did you do this? It's always a dead end. Like, oh, I don't have nothing new to tell you. I don't have nothing new to tell you.
So as parents of a child that you have lost this senseless violence out here, how does that make you feel? You know, when you, here you are in a big city, the city of Philadelphia, and you know there's cameras everywhere. But how does that make you feel when you get a response like that?
It's devastating.
Okay.
Like, go ahead, Jen.
It makes you angry. It makes you so angry because that's your child. And doesn't matter how old they get, you still feel like you need to protect your child. Well, I couldn't save his life. Well, let me try to figure out or help figure out who took his life from us. And then when you're sending the person that's, you know, because I mean, there's so many young kids. Chucky was friends with so many people. And you're like, no, we're handling this the right way. Like, no more violence. No more, like, no, I want no threats coming from anyone, because we're going to do this the right way. Mm-hmm. And then you get no response from them. You feel hopeless. Like, there's this, you just feel worthless.
I think one of the things that we are dealing with here, and I'm getting this response from a lot of families, they say that they feel like their child is just a docket number or a case or a file.
Exactly.
I think one of the things with me is I had to express to the DA, the prosecutor's office, say, listen, this is my daughter. She's not a number. She's not a docket. She's not a piece of paper. She's a living human being, you know, who is deceased now, but she's still my child, and I want her to be treated as such. That I think that's what makes it so hard. And then when you don't hear anything, I'm quite sure the anger builds up, and you don't know which way to turn, because you have no idea about what's going on. And I think that that's something that the city is really trying to change. Yes, I understand that there's a shortage of police officers. I understand that, you know, there's a lot of things that are taking place in this city. But I think that, you know, somebody asked me yesterday, I had an interview talking about, do you think Larry Krasner or the mayor should begin visiting some of these families? And I said, yes, absolutely. Because
absolutely they should. Yeah. Maybe if they see the impact that it has on not just the parents, because Chucky had siblings and children. He had little brothers that he basically raised. That was their big brother, but he was the only father figure they pretty much had. Mm-hmm. Our family is torn apart. Like, I look at my kids and Dean's kids, and I'm like, there's just something missing. I can see it. I can see it in their face. I can see it in the way they act. Nobody acts the same. The interactions with the family is not the same. Like, there's just a piece missing. Maybe if they did start visiting families and they seen what's going on, they would think this was a bigger deal.
And I think
to see the actual impact. Yeah.
And that's very true. I think sometimes even some parents, including the city or the prosecutor or whoever, I think they forget about the siblings and what they're dealing with and going through as well. How have they been, with you being there, how have they been handling it? Like, what kind of steps are you taking to ensure that they don't lose control, so to speak?
First of all, nobody talks about Chucky.
Okay.
Nobody. Okay. Me and Dean are the only people that talk about Chucky. And I think that's why me and her have become so close. Because when you talk about Chucky, there's like this, like, it might be something funny. Like, oh, remember when Chucky hit and everybody will laugh and they'll comment something on it. But then there's like this awkward silence. And then the subject gets changed real quick. Part of it is, I think, on my end, I think they're afraid. They don't want to hurt me. Well, I know for a fact, the grandkids, like Chucky's kids, they don't like to talk about their dad. My son, my youngest son, they don't like to talk about Chucky because they're afraid they're going to upset me.
Right.
But I keep trying to tell them it upsets me more when nobody will talk about him. And I think now that everybody has just taken that approach, I think now that's everybody's way of dealing with it. We just push it down and we don't talk about them. We don't think about them, which is not healthy at all. Because it's going to surface sometime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going through something similar. I have a 17-year-old, and him and my daughter were very close. Very close. He's become very quick-tempered. It doesn't take much for him to, you know, snap. He kind of keeps to himself. He's not that outgoing child that he used to be. People don't realize.
That's Gabriel.
That's one of your children. I believe.
That's Gabriel.
I believe it, because people don't realize how losing someone so close to you can affect you or affect the family as a whole. As I said yesterday in at City Hall, it's when you take a person's life, you destroy a family. And that seems to be what is happening out here today. You know, families are falling apart and people don't realize that, especially with men, because men don't grieve the same way that women do. And we all know that. And that brings me to another question, because I always ask the same thing. How is his father handling it?
Chucky was very much like his father. Mm-hmm. Chucky was the protector. Well, Big Chucky's the same way. He's the protector. So Chucky doesn't show me emotion because he knows if he shows me emotion, then it's going to bring out more of my emotion.
Right.
So Chucky is a private person. He does his grieving alone, like in the shower. Like, I'll notice him coming out of the shower and his eyes are red.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, he doesn't leave. So when we were in Florida when we got the phone call about Chucky being shot. So we came home the very next day because that's the soonest flight we could get. And we were at the hospital for, you know, 2 days until Chucky was done with his organ donor and everything. And Big Chucky, we didn't go home, we didn't shower, we didn't leave the hospital. Chucky had a shirt on, and from him leaning over and hugging Chucky, and for them 2 days, like, the smell of little Chucky is still on that shirt. So Big Chucky doesn't leave for work in the morning without taking that shirt out of a baggie and smelling it.
Oh, my God.
That's every morning. So he does it, like, he grieves, but again, like I said, he does it without me knowing. Like, he leaves for work at 5 a.m, so he gets up at 4, but he's not the quietest person in the morning at all. So I hear him, and I hear the bag open every morning, I hear his deep breath every morning. And like I said, he'll take showers, and he comes out, his eyes are red.
So here's what we're going to do. Hold that thought. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break. And we take this break, you know, give you a chance to get yourself together. We want to thank you for joining us here at WWDBA 60 AM Talk Radio, A Heart for the People Christian Ministry. We'll be right back. We have our guests, Jennifer Molesky and Dean Maud. I want to thank them for being with us. We'll be right back.
I used to see you in the places we would go, like your face is painted on the walls. I've been trying to forget all the moments that we spent, 'cause now I do it on my own. Oh, you and I were like this summer, but now it's winter here on my own. If I would've known.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome back to A Heart for the People Christian Ministry here at WWDB 860 AM Talk Radio. Today, my guests are Jennifer Molesky and Dean Maud, and they are talking about their son, Chucky. Maud, we want to thank the two of you for being on. I just want to take a little break, and you guys can get yourself together. I know this is hard. I know what I went through when I had to do interviews, and, you know, it's not an easy task. So I do apologize, Dean, if you want to complete what you were saying, that's fine.
No, all I was going to add to it is he grieves, but he, like you already mentioned, he grieves different than women.
Mm-hmm.
Fathers normally do, and Chucky does it in private.
Okay. And how his siblings, do they grieve at all, or are they just how do they handle it?
his Matthew Carter's the best. I swear he is. He'll like look at me and he'll say, "Do you miss Uncle Chucky?" And I'll say, "Yeah." And he'll say, "Do you want to look at memories and good old times?" And I'll say, "Yeah." So Carter is not afraid to express. Carter is not afraid to talk about his Uncle Chucky. Okay. And Carter was very close to Chucky because Carter, we always lived together in the same house. So, like, when I went to work, Chucky would watch Carter. So, like, they were very close. And his daughters don't really talk about him at all. I try to get Isabella to watch, like, videos, and she'll look at it for a second and turn away. I seen my son Gabriel cry maybe twice, and they were short little cries, and then he sucked it up, but he's the one that I'm seeing the most with, most problems, the change, it's like a completely different kid.
Okay. Like, and Gabriel.
He was a sweetheart. We could be in the car and somebody will I'll go to make a turn and somebody goes when they shouldn't go and he'll be like, "Why are you stupid?" Was he like so quick to be angry at everything? He's just I'll be like, "I love you, Gabriel." He'll be like, "What?" Like just so angry. All the time. And he was the sweetest kid, though. Dean will tell you.
He was. And that's what I say to him now. Like, we just had a party at my house last weekend for my grandson, Julian, and Gabriel was there. And I'm like, "You know, you got to promise me that you're going to get back on the happy Gabe, sweet, innocent Gabe." I made him pinky promise me. So I don't know how far that pinky promise is going to go, but we'll see.
So
he is a different kid. He used to be the sweetest kid ever. Like, and now he'll come in, he'll say hi. But like before he'd come in my house, he'd say hi, Dean. He'd give me a hug. And he was just so respectful. He was so sweet. And now
he was one of those kids that was just so lovable. Like everything about him was so sweet. And he is not anymore at all. He probably has it the hardest. Anthony is the one who scares me the most because Anthony avoids the family at any cost. Like, we have parties. He doesn't come. He always has an excuse. He can't get a ride. I'll come pick you up. And then I'll get to wherever he said he was, and he's like, "Oh, I left and went over here." But he knows that now I don't have enough time to go over to this other place.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony has done that since literally after Chucky's funeral. I mean, Anthony just avoids family at any cost.
So I don't want to cut you off. We're down to like 3 minutes, 2 minutes. So what I want to know is, very quickly, what would be your message that you would want to convey to the listeners today?
And there's a $50,000 reward for the arrest and conviction of the person that killed Chucky. He's not just a file sitting on a detective's desk, because Jen and I are both working, and we will not stop until we get justice for our son.
Oh, we've went to the FBI and everything, so don't think that we're going to stop, because I'm not. I never will. I'm in a slump right now, but I'll get out of it because Dean and I both go through it. She'll be in a slump. I'll pull her out. I'll be in a slump. She'll pull me out, but we're never going to stop. It's never going to stop. I'm never going to stop. My son wouldn't have stopped if it was me.
Right.
So I will never stop. We will never stop.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard it. They will not stop until justice is served. I want to thank Dean Maud and Jennifer Molesky for joining us today. I want you to know that parents of murdered children, Jessica, as she expressed yesterday, we are here for you. We are going to continue to be here for you, and we will take this walk with you. One of the things, I feel kind of bad because in my situation, it happened in Jersey, but I didn't go through, you know, you not only lost your son, but now it almost feels like you're being victimized all over again because there's no information, because nothing's coming forward. So I just want you to know that we are here for you and you are in my prayers consistently, and I will not stop. And anything that we can do for you, we will do it. And we would definitely want to have you back again. This is not over. We will definitely bring you back for another interview if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for joining us here today at WWDB 860 AM Talk Radio, A Heart for the People Christian Ministry. My guest today, Jennifer Molesky and Dean Maud, we thank you for being with us. We thank you for listening out there in radio land, and we do appreciate you. May God bless and take care. I love you, but God loves you best. Take care.
Still see you in the places we would go, like your face is painted on the walls. I've been trying to forget all the moments that we spent, 'cause now I do it on my own. Oh, you and I were like the summer, but now it's winter here on my own. If I would've known that you wouldn't be here anymore, I would've made the moments last a little longer. 'Cause now I'm alone, and you're just a memory in my mind. I would've given it.